It's official. Schools in Massachusetts will be closed for the rest of the school year, and students will educate at home. While delivering the news this afternoon, Governor Baker said he realizes that this isn't easy for anyone.
We know it's not ideal, and we recognize that we're asking a lot from parents to hang in there for the remainder of the school year. The end of the school year typically represents an exciting time for all students. Championship games, field trips, outdoor activities, and other great events that sometimes happen once in a lifetime are supposed to fill the calendar.
So what does this mean for students, parents, teachers, and the school districts themselves? Joining me now is Diane Kelly. She is the superintendent for the Revere Public Schools. Superintendent Kelly, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
So let me start by asking you, how are you?
Doing all right. We're hanging in. Fortunately, we have a phenomenal team in Revere, so everybody's been pitching in together to help out and kind of build this ship as we row, I guess.
What's your reaction to the governor's announcement today?
I was happy about it. I think the governor made a really good choice, and it was a good symbol of his leadership to kind of direct schools that were feeling very insecure about what the next step was and, you know, how long we were going to be closed for. I think it's a little bit easier to make plans for how we're going to support students and support families and support teachers through this closure now that we have kind of an endpoint for it. Whereas before, it felt kind of strange to me making plans and not knowing if they were for 2 weeks or a month or 2 months or whatever the case may be. So, you know, I think that student safety and teacher safety, everybody's safety is of the utmost importance, and I think this is a move in the right direction to ensure that.
So were you anticipating that the governor would do this, and was your hope that he would not only set a date, but that that date would be, you know, no more for the rest of this academic year?
You know, there's been a lot of talk at the state level with superintendents from across the state and with the Department of Education, the commissioner, and folks have weighed in, and there were certainly good arguments on both sides of whether we should reopen or not. I think that everybody feels a little bit of a release in just having that clarity of understanding of exactly what the rest of the school year is going to look like. You know, that clarity and that release that comes with the clarity is also backfilled by new problems that we need to figure out. And I think the soundbite that you played of the governor hit a lot of them. Our focus now is on what will graduation look like, if there will be a graduation, and when will that be? And how do we work with particularly seniors who are missing out on a whole lot of moments in life, once-in-a-lifetime moments? How do we try to fill a little bit of that void for them? And then what do we do with our kids that are in early childhood through grade 11 this year? Next year we'll be in our kindergarten through 12th grade classrooms to make sure that we are closing the gap for this little bit of a void in education, where we know that even our best remote learning plans aren't going to deliver the same thing that these kids would have experienced had they been in classrooms with their phenomenal teachers.
Superintendent Kelly, I want to stop you there because I do want to ask you about the gap. Do you have concerns that extending the educating from home, the school buildings being closed through the end of the year, could exacerbate existing equity gaps among students in terms of educational access, outcomes, test scores, summer learning loss, et cetera?
Yeah, and, you know, I think those things are definite realities. We know that there's a summer learning loss, and right now with this closure that's been since really the middle of March, and we're not sure at this point if we're going to be able to engage in any summer programs. It's going to take a little bit more time to see if we'll be able to do that. But this is basically a much larger kind of summer gap that all kids will be experiencing. And certainly some kids and their families are doing some of the work from home. Some are doing more than others. I think that right now our focus has been on social and emotional well-being, and I think that's really important. And now we are starting to come to a place where people feel emotionally comfortable with some of the remote learning work that we're doing, and that makes it a little bit easier to do. I think taking some of the pressure off of parents to feel like, if I don't get this right, then it's going to be the end of my child's opportunity to be successful academically. That's not the case, and that's what we want to reinforce. you know, whatever the remote learning plan looks like in any district across the state, I've spoken numerous times to multiple superintendents everywhere, and we all understand that this is a problem that we're going to be addressing for the next several years. We will see some remnants of this closure 2 and 3 years down the road. And so our goal as school leaders is to work with our teacher teams to figure out how we're going to close those gaps to every extent possible for each individual student.
Any permanent implications or changes, lasting impacts that you anticipate on our K through 12 education system?
And you know, that's a really great question, because when we, you know, one of the things that we've seen that's been a positive about the remote learning plan is that kids really have a lot more voice and choice in how they demonstrate their learning. And we're celebrating the great work that kids are doing uniquely outside of their home in their backyard, you know, not with other kids. But they're doing a lot more project-based and kind of interest projects where it's something that they're drawn to begin with. And, you know, that kind of speaks to the long-standing discussion we've been having about how to engage kids in school and how to make kids more interested in what they're learning, or really to make what they're learning more interesting to them. So, you know, I think there are pieces of this experience that we're going to learn from and grow from, and hopefully will make us a better school districts across the Commonwealth in the years to come.
You just used the word hopefully, so that'll be my last question to you. Where are you getting your hope and inspiration from right now?
Oh, gosh. I have to say 100% from the teachers and the kids, and I'll add the parents to that too, because it's really been amazing with so much that could go wrong and so many challenges to see so many people stand up and say, oh, that's a problem. Let me see. I have an idea how to fix that, or let's work together and let's figure it out and focus on the good things and making sure everybody has what they need more than this isn't perfect. So
Diane Kelly,
really inspirational.
I want to thank you, Superintendent for Revere Public Schools. I know this is a big and important day, and I appreciate you spending some of it with Radio Boston.
Thank you very much.
So for a wider look at the impact of the governor's announcement today, we're joined by WBUR's Max Larkin. Max, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Tiziana.
So you heard our conversation with Superintendent Kelly. Let me begin by just inviting you to react to what we heard from her.
Yeah, I think she probably spoke for a lot of administrators and educators in saying just at last some certainty. You know, this isn't the outcome that nearly anyone wanted, but then it was adding stress to try to plan for two different outcomes. Are we going back later this year, or are we just calling it quits? And then Diane Kelly's an old hand at all this stuff, and I was impressed by her practical tone, including practicality about remote learning. Like, it may be working better than it was a few weeks ago, but then there is evidence to suggest, as you asked, Tiziana, that remote learning just does exacerbate existing learning gaps. So that's going to be a giant struggle for educators for the next couple months.
Max, let me ask you about your reaction to Governor Baker today. One, were you surprised by his decision, and were there big headlines in there you were really focused on?
I don't think I was surprised. I don't think most educators or administrators who've been paying attention were surprised by the news, even if we're starting to turn a corner, and I don't think that's a certainty. Massachusetts is clearly still a national epicenter for this virus, and you've already had 34 other states make this call. And as for surprises, I guess it was good to hear from education officials that they'll be offering further guidance on how to support mental health when students are learning remotely. That's something you see come up again and again, just these feelings of loneliness and uncertainty. And then there were some statements as to making sure that students won't be left behind. There was talk of keeping track of the most vulnerable students to make sure they get the remedial services they need when this is all leveled out a little bit.
Have you heard from any teachers? I know this was, I mean, the governor's press conference was only at noon, and it's like 3:25 right now. But have you heard from any teachers?
Yeah, I think because teachers saw this coming, I can rely on conversations I had before the announcement. I heard from a group of BPS, Boston Public Schools teachers, the other day. They basically said BPS is doing pretty well with the practical aspects of rolling out remote learning. So training them, helping families, providing Chromebooks to the tens of thousands of families in Boston that needed one. But then Francis Pina, who's a math teacher at Charlestown High, he raised issues about the philosophy underneath this big, quick pivot. He said a month in, he was kind of second guessing that a bit. Can we hear that tape, please?
The first 2 weeks should have been focused on engagement through Karen and then think about academics. And I felt like at different schools, different levels, we all kind of went on and just went right into like work as if like what we did in a classroom translated one to one, and it doesn't.
Worth noting, those five teachers had generally seen pretty alarmingly low rates of participation in their online learning. Some said 70%, some said 60%. So part of the work is going to be finding those students and making sure that they aren't missed.
Max, I have been thinking a lot today about the social-emotional dimension of this for kids. I know you talked about that a little bit more. I also know you've been reporting on education for a long time. What should we be concerned about and paying attention to when kids will be isolated from their social groups, their friend groups, their peer groups for so much longer now?
Yeah, I think it varies a little bit by age, right? So for the younger kids, I think the issue is that they have these routines, sort of developmental work depends on seeing other students, playing with them, seeing their teachers, and kind of getting used to the rhythm of a sort of grown-up day. So that's a concern. And then you heard Baker go on at some length about high school seniors. For some students, the journey to graduation from high school is this kind of, the first great adventure endeavor of their lives. So making sure that those students have some sense of accomplishment and of celebration in really uncertain times, that's going to be a huge lift for lots of districts across this state.
And Max, what are you hearing from parents?
Yeah, I will say the few parents I've spoken to today also saw this decision coming, thought it was inevitable, but at the same time, they're not thrilled about it. For those with really young kids, they might feel the grind of having those little kind of spark plugs in their house and trying to work at the same time. And then for older kids, you've got this big mystery ahead of that high stakes transition to college. Some high schools are still marking down grades. Others are not. The state is going to let local decision makers make that decision. Then you've got the SAT and the ACT canceled. So what does that mean in terms of the move to college, which can feel again, like this huge culmination of all your work up to that point. So parents are just hoping that the state isn't done working to craft guidance, to improve online learning. And generally, they hope we'll all get pretty soon at least a slightly clearer picture of what's on the way.
That's WBUR's Max Larkin. Max, I really appreciate you taking the time to give us some analysis on this important day with the governor.
Thanks, Tiziana.
Governor Charlie Baker announced today that schools will remain closed for the rest of the academic year. In his daily press briefing this afternoon, he acknowledged this can be hard news for those trying to keep their kids busy at home.
School closures also put a tremendous strain on parents and guardians at home. Remote learning means parents have to juggle their own job, whether it's working from home or still making their shifts while helping their kids stay focused on school.
For these reasons and many others, trying to fill the void of school at home seems nearly impossible for some parents. Call us. If you've been schooling your kids at home, how's it been going? Have you thrown in the towel and decided not to do it altogether? Or are you finding that you can manage it and have tips you'd like to share with others? Are there other challenges, such as having to go to work as an essential worker or other circumstances that are making it hard to do this? We want to hear your stories and your thoughts. Call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Or you can send us a tweet at Radio Boston. Jenny Weiner joins us. Jenny is a parent who lives in Somerville, and she recently wrote about her refusal to run what she calls a coronavirus homeschool in an op-ed for the New York Times. She's also an associate professor of educational leadership at the University of Connecticut. Jenny, welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Also with us is Michelle Sanchez. She's the principal of Epiphany School, an independent school in Boston, whose families face some unique challenges to schooling at home. Welcome to Radio Boston, Michelle. We're glad to have you.
Thank you for having me. Happy to be here.
So, Michelle, let me just start quickly with you. How has it been going with remote learning for the families of Epiphany School?
I think many challenges. We've had many parents already really, even though we know it's the best thing to do, not happy about not going back to school until, you know, next year, pretty much, although we will have some summer program. It has been quite a challenge for many of our families.
And Jenny, what was your reaction to the news from the governor today, to the school buildings being closed for the rest of the year and online learning or at-home learning?
Yeah, much like I think the reporter, I think we were sort of already in the stage of thinking of it as being inevitable. And also, I'm very grateful that teachers will have the opportunity to, and obviously administrators, to really think deeply about how they're going to welcome so many children back to school with varying access to technology and support during this period. So if anything, I think I'm feeling relieved and trusting that that those working in schools will have the time to make good decisions as a result of this.
For both of you, what are your biggest concerns about educating at home for kids and families for the rest of the academic year? Michelle.
Sure. I'd say for me, it's kind of that big question is how do you reach all the kids? For many kids, this way of learning is working. It is not what you'd love to do. There's no replacement for in the classroom direct instruction. But we do have a good population of our kids who have different needs, who are on IEPs, who this type of learning really is not working for. And we're trying to get as creative as possible in creating as many opportunities to engage every single student so that the gap doesn't continue to widen.
Jenny, you were clear in your op-ed that there were pieces of it that already weren't working for your family. How about now? What's your biggest concern going forward?
Yeah, I just want to echo everything that Michelle said. So I sit kind of as a professional educator and then also obviously of a mom of 8-year-old twins, one of whom has disabilities and an IEP and is incredibly serviced by the public schools, but of course is not receiving those services right now. So I think like many parents, my biggest concern is obviously the well-being of my children and also my health and well-being so that we can come out of this still loving each other, still being able to be supportive of one another and having the resiliency to face whatever comes next. And how we position ourselves in as parents during this time feels important to make sure that this event doesn't turn into a lifetime trauma for our kids or for the kids, you know, served by the system at large.
Our listeners are ready to join the conversation. 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Lynn is on the line from Norwood. Lynn, join the conversation.
Hi. Thank you for having me. I'm just calling because definitely we are struggling. I'm a mom to six, but I have three that are school-aged, and we have one computer, and it's been extremely frustrating. I hate to say that we are kind of just doing what we can at the bare minimum. The only upside to it is that whatever they are struggling with, we have an exponential amount of time, and really we just go by our own schedule to address whatever they are struggling with. But at the same time, it really is, I feel kind of defeated. And as being an essential worker, it just, and I'm working 10-hour days, sometimes 15, and, you know, making the time to do this has just been pretty hard, to say the least.
Lynn, it sounds like such a difficult situation. Is there anything anyone in this mix could do that would help you feel less defeated?
You know, maybe because we don't have a computer, maybe some home supplies that could be mailed to us, just some packets to do, something like that, that the kids, it's tangible. They can touch it and they can say, okay, we have work to do. And it's not all just in the computer. And we have to figure out 8 different applications that are being used. It's kind of difficult that way. So I think that would really help me.
Michelle Sanchez, what are your reactions to Lynn's call?
Wow. I feel you 100%, and my heart breaks for you because it is a lot of the situations that our families are going through. And from the very beginning, we've tried to ensure that all of our families have exactly what they need. So we're a school heavily rooted in kind of the social, emotional, mental health of kids and families. So that's where we began all of this. And we were able to send all of our families home with Chromebooks, including some who had siblings who didn't have Chromebooks. So we were able to kind of muster up a few to lend until the other families got it. We've been able to send each week. We're doing these huge packets of whether it's food or paper or supplies or books, whatever it is. And just for that, because we know there are lots of families who just can't be there. Like I have my own children who I have to sit on top of in this time. But I come from a home where if I was a child during this, my mother didn't speak English. She was working all the time and she wouldn't be able to help me. So we understand that we've got those families who really need that extra support in trying to do this level of work with kind of every single teacher and every single adult who we can kind of garnish and muster to help us do, whether it's those deliveries, whether it's making packets, whatever it is, and really trying to reach every family possible.
Let's take another call, 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Toby's on the line from Walpole. Toby, go ahead.
Hi. I think that we ought to give online learning a chance. And what I mean is that the teachers need to be clear and concise, and if possible, and I know Zoom does this because I've been using it, to be interactive with the kids. That really involves them. It's the best we can do. Another point I'd like to make is it's going to take some rewiring of everyone to do this because most of us aren't used to talking to people face-to-face like that, but it can be done.
Toby, how many kids do you have educating at home?
None right now. My kids have graduated, but the reason I wanted to call was that I have seen online learning work. But the problem is not every family has a home computer. Or an iPad or even an iPhone, perhaps, where they could make this happen. So I just wanted to pass that on. That it needs to be given a chance, and it needs to have special parameters for the teachers.
Thanks for that, Toby. Jenny, what is the balance between what Toby's saying, sort of give it a chance, and not losing your head with the challenges that seem intractable, like what Lynn called with?
Absolutely. And I just want to say thank you to Lynn, because obviously she said she's an essential worker and that we appreciate you and hope that you can find some peace and grace during this time, because she sounds like an incredible lady. I think there's a balance between sort of respecting, honoring the work that teachers put forth and doing, a good try to utilize as many resources as you can if you do, in fact, have access. So, of course, Michelle brought up all those issues that are real, as did Lynn. And also kind of how do you want to position yourself relative to your kids right now? Again, I have a child with, a disability. I also have, a more neurotypical child. But sitting in front of a screen for an 8-year-old for multiple hours, regardless of how neurotypical they are, does not always produce the best effects, even if it's an engaging video or interaction with their teacher. And so when it stops being helpful or stops doing something positive in the space for myself or my child, then we just call it quits. And that's not to disrespect the efforts the teachers have made. In fact, I would also say, to Toby's point, I hear that it's great to have really good online learning, but, teachers have children at home as well. They're trying to negotiate a pandemic and unprecedented situation. And it feels to me quite a bit to ask of them to do more than be human so we can feel a little bit more human.
Michelle, our lines are full, but before I go back to callers, I'd love to give you a chance to respond to what you just heard from Jenny.
Yeah, I live in the same world where I'm trying to get my kids through, but I feel like our families we're pushing them to push the kids to keep going, because our kids come in already behind, and really the idea of saying like, yep, we are going to be able to opt out right now and not do school would truly be heartbreaking for our school community. We are showing up on doors with masks and saying like, how can we help you engage, because we haven't seen you on the computer this week. And I also really understand there are families that it's just not working for. So we are trying to find ways that we can get around and make it work for every family. But I do, I really honor the fact that she is having a hard time and values like how your families come out of it. Because in my own home, as a teacher, as a school principal, and a sixth grade boy who's really having a hard time with the online learning, I'm going through both of those myself, but also really pushing parents on the school side to engage and use every single resource as possible to continue to keep their kids engaged.
Let's take another call, 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Share your experiences, your questions, your triumphs and frustrations. We are all in this, and it is a challenge no matter how you cut it. Jessica is on the line from Peabody. Jessica, go ahead.
Hi, yeah. So I am actually a theater arts teacher here on the North Shore, and in addition to having to find a way to adapt my curriculum of acting and movement activities to a digital sphere, my drama club was like 2.5 weeks away from opening our spring musical. So with this closure, my seniors are now kind of like, well, what are we doing? Is there any way that we can save this? Do some sort of staged reading in the summer? And, you know, we're thinking about seniors a lot, but my freshmen, too, are also missing out on their first musical.
I got to tell you, Jessica, you're speaking to my heart because my son was supposed to be in the pit as a freshman for his first musical, and school was shut down 7 days before the show. So I hear you. I hear you. I heard a sigh of commiseration from one of our panelists, too. I don't know which of you it was but I want to turn to you guys.
No, it was me. I can't remember who it was, if it was Superintendent Kelly, who was wonderful, but, you know, talking about how this is differentially affecting different groups of kids. And I just feel my heart just breaks for the seniors and for the people who feel like this is their one chance to do the thing that they've hoped for and dreamed about. But I would also just say that, you know, I think what may help is that we all are in this together. And, you know, we keep trying to focus on the ways in which we can connect, do the things that we've dreamed about, you know, when it's safe to do so. And so we've been making these kind of like a look forward bucket, which of course doesn't fully mitigate the pain we're feeling right now, but at least it gives us a sense of hope and possibilities for the future. But I think it just stinks, basically. You know, I feel terrible.
It is
for
tough,
them.
I think. Michelle, we've got a Twitter question from @IanDavid. Ian David says, I'm working with my eighth grader remote learning. I found it very helpful to give him a schedule to follow for the day to mimic school. I have to be away at work all day, but he has been great self-regulating and getting his work completed. I find myself thinking a lot about the executive function challenges for kids at all age levels around self-management, time management, scheduling. How are you thinking about that as a principal?
That is exactly the thing we've been doing. So executive functioning is a major problem that many of our kids, particularly middle school, going into the upper grades, have. So we have numerous of those schedules. We have like Google Doc, Google Drives, where we've created individual schedules for so many of the kids, kind of using some color coding. I've done the same for my own boys. Really kind to trying to like ensure that if there isn't somebody sitting right on you, that you know there's a teacher who's going to be Zoom checking in with you at 10 o'clock. There's somebody who's expecting you to kind of send them a little text at, you know, 12 o'clock to make sure that you're still on where you're supposed to be. I think, you know, creating the schedule is the best way to go. You know, also creating the space, so finding a quiet space. So both of my sons have, you know, different spaces, which is always hard. Like, we have some of our kids who end up being caretakers for smaller kids at home while mom has to go to work. So there are lots of situations where you can offer up a lot of suggestions, but it really almost comes down to being impossible to like pull it off when so many other kind of just natural, normal life things are getting in the way of kids sitting on a Zoom, you know, class for 3 hours a day. Gets really hard.
Let's take another call, 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Beth's on the line from Beverly. Beth, join the conversation.
Hi, I'm calling from Beverly, and I have two kids, a first grader and a third grader. So we've been doing this for some time. My husband's also a teacher, and I'm an administrator. So we're home with our kids, and I have to say my main concern is that I've already been a parent who's very leery of a lot of learning being done on tech, and I'm concerned that this is increasing that to a point that I'm not comfortable with as a parent.
Why are you leery, Beth? What are you uncomfortable with?
So I guess my biggest concern about technology use in the classroom is that I think that especially young kids, like my six-year-old, simply don't learn in the same way. It's not the same multi-sensory experience to have a book read to you on YouTube, for instance, than to hold a book and to really interact with it. Those are my biggest concerns, are where I don't think my kids are retaining the same amount of information, not even close.
So, Jenny, let me invite you to react to Beth there.
Yeah. So, I have the same concerns. I mean, also, my sons don't respond well, like, just playing a video game or watching an exciting video, even if it's their teacher reading. Like, you can see a physiological response where their faces get red and they start sort of, like, sweating, which is troublesome to me. But I would also just balance that with the fact that there are people who don't have access to textbooks, to the materials that, Lynn was talking about at home. And so I think the balance is that the schools are doing their best to provide as many resources as they can. And then it's sort of, I think, up to parents to some extent when they have the privilege to do so, to be able to work through and come up with other ways of engaging and learning. I thought that there was a piece that the superintendent was talking about that was really powerful, which is like getting your kids, if you have the opportunity, outside or doing sort of self constructed learning. And we've tried to supplement with that, whether it's baking cookies or, you know, doing, treasure hunts in cemeteries to try to figure out things that they can learn or think about, so that we're not always in front of a screen. But again, we're respecting the teachers when they're sending things that we can do and we feel that are manageable for our family.
I'd love to get one more call in. We've got Jeff on the line from Methuen. Jeff, welcome to the conversation.
Hi, thank you. So I guess I wanted to get your guests' opinions on the fact that in order to accomplish all of this online learning, you know, my children are now having to sign up and be a part of all these, complicated user agreements for all these various pieces of software that they need in order to accomplish this remote learning. As a parent, I'm not super comfortable, you know, with my children having to sign like four or five different complicated user agreements, you know, and then we have to keep track of passwords and usernames and all this stuff. And it's very overwhelming.
I can understand that, Jeff. Let's turn to Michelle and get some response there. Michelle Sanchez.
Yeah, I would say initially this has also been a thing that kind of has been going through different iterations with us as it gets longer and longer of time we're home. As we sent the kids home with the Chromebooks, they had lots of blocks and lots of everything is controlled by us through this software called GoGuardian that we can see everything. It's all licensed under us. They're not signing up for their own accounts. But as teachers are now learning about these new programs, new ways to get kids engaged, we also like initially turned off our video cameras because we didn't want to put the access in that kind of access in middle school kids' hands. But then teachers were like, oh, it's just really great to be able to see them and do the work. So we're like incredibly understanding of how much we're even opening the world to these kids that we probably never really wanted to open to them. But also know that, you know, in order to kind of keep this something that is interesting and keeping kids engaged, that we are kind of putting a lot of power in their hands and really relying on whatever software, whatever kind of the teachers have access to, but really relying on parents to help us kind of monitor that as well, because we've had to, like, in many ways, let our guard down in terms of what we're allowing computers and giving kids access to. So I completely understand your level of uncomfort with that.
We have a little less than 2 minutes left. Gives me a time to ask each panelist one more question. Jenny, I'll start with you. What is your advice to parents who are feeling frazzled but also committed to helping their kids be successful learners with the, you know, now knowing schools are closed through the end of the year?
Yeah, thanks so much. And I just want to say thank you to Dr. Sanchez, too. I think she's incredible, and I'm so grateful that she's serving our kids. So my advice would just be to try to be as kind as to yourself and to your kids and as you can be, and to know that, you know, what works today may not work tomorrow, to do your best and know that you you love your kids, you care about their education, and you're doing your best, and that's all we can really ask for right now. And that's, you know, that's the advice I'm giving myself anyway.
And Michelle Sanchez, what advice do you want to give to the people who are listening today? We had a whole bunch of callers we didn't even have time for. So maybe your advice to them.
I mean, that's great advice. I think you do whatever you can. I mean, the most important thing is that people come out of this in a good space, because this is a very difficult time, knowing that we're not alone, knowing that there are so many people out there you can reach out to. But, you know, this is a small amount of time in our lifetimes, and we want to make it through, and we want to make sure that we're being safe and supporting each other and not judging anyone's decision, and really kind of supporting everyone in anything that we can support.
That's Michelle. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. That's Michelle Sanchez, principal of Epiphany School, an independent school in Boston. Thanks for taking your time to be with us today.
Happy to be here.
And Jenny Weiner, a parent who lives in Somerville and recently wrote about her refusal to run a coronavirus homeschool in an op-ed for the New York Times. Jenny, thanks for joining us. I appreciate it.
Thank you, and stay safe, everybody.